kawani at miyembro ng media at gayon din po ang Commission on Human Rights. Before we proceed, I would like to acknowledge the presence of the following senators: Senator Noynoy Aquino, Senator Rodolfo Biazon, and our Majority Leader, Senator Kiko Pangilinan. On the part of our invited guests, we have here with us Attorney Velasco of the Department of Justice, Mr. Makasaet of the Philippine Press Institute, Mr. Mabasa of the National Press Club, Mr. Canoy of the KBP, Ms. De Gracias of NHK Broadcasting, Mr. Tony Lopez of MOPC, Ms. Ressa of ABS-CBN, Ms. De La Peña Reyes of GMA7, Mr. Kabakungan of PDI, and Mr. Desilias of Malaya. On the part of the government, we have with us, in addition to Prosecutor Velasco, Attorney Kisumbing, the chairperson of the Commission on Human Rights. For the information of the committee, we are in receipt of a letter addressed to both Senator Honasan and myself, signed by Secretary Chudoro, Secretary Gonzalez, and Secretary Puno, which reads in part: "This refers to a letter invitation inviting us and other government officials to a public hearing tomorrow, December 13 at 10 a.m. in connection with several Senate resolutions regarding the Manila Peninsula Hotel incident. Your Honors must be aware that all of the government officials invited to the inquiry are currently engaged in critical operations to identify and capture those involved and who are still at large. They are likewise involved in the investigation and build-up of cases to be filed in court, and any disclosure of information relative to the incident may prejudice ongoing operations as well as cases filed and to be filed in court. It is in the national interest that such officials are allowed to do their job with undiminished time and attention. In view thereof, we regret that we would not be able to attend the Senate inquiry relative to the Manila Pen incident at this time." At the proper time, the chair and perhaps some members of the committee would act on this particular excuse and letter sent by government officials regarding our inquiry this morning. But so as not to prolong the hearing and the statements to be made by our resource persons, may I at this point acknowledge and recognize Senator Honasan for his opening remarks on the part of the Committee on Public Order and illegal drugs. Senator Honasan is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very briefly, the Committee on Public Order and Safety and Illegal Drugs, to which the four resolutions were also referred, will try to conduct, in aid of legislation, an inquiry and help identify and clarify the laws, procedures and rules governing police operations, peace and order operations related to public safety vis-a-vis media activity or any civilian activity for that matter. And this is in order for the committee to strike or help strike a healthy balance between the different parties' duties and responsibilities. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Honasan. Before proceeding to ask our guests to give their opening remarks, may I recognize the committee's general counsel, Attorney Tomano, to conduct the oath to our invited guests.
Mr. Chairman, may we request the resource persons to kindly stand as we administer your oath. Kindly raise your right hand. Please repeat after me. I, state your name, swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth before this joint committee investigation. Kindly sit down. Mr. Chairman, just a few points that the committee would like to inform our resource persons. Number one, for the resource persons who have brought with them their legal counsel, may we request that the counsels for our resource persons enter their appearance by registering with the Committee on Justice Secretariat, Attorney Jane Azardon. She's the lady in red over here. And secondly, we'd like to remind the counsels for the resource persons that the participation of counsels during the course of this hearing and while resource persons are testifying shall be limited only to advising said witnesses as to his legal rights. We remind counsels that they shall not be permitted to engage in oral argument with this committee, but shall confine their activity to the area of legal advice.
Thank you. Proceeding now, as the saying goes, first in time is first in right. We will be calling upon our invited guests in the order of their arrival to give their respective opening statements and opening remarks. Thereafter, we will give an opportunity to the senators again in the order of their arrival, except in the case of the authors of the respective resolutions I mentioned earlier, in which case they will be given leeway to ask questions as they arrive. With the permission of my colleagues in this joint committee hearing, may I now acknowledge and call upon Ms. Ellen Tordesillas, journalist, columnist of Malaya, for her opening statement and remarks. Ma'am, you are recognized.
Good morning, Your Honors. In the November 29 incident at the Manila Peninsula, I see two media-related concerns. The first pertains to the duty of a journalist to inform the public of the unfolding crisis as truthfully as he or she can. The second pertains to the constitutional right of a person, journalist or not, to liberty and due process. When I decided to stay at the Manila Peninsula despite the evacuation order from the authorities, in the first place, Malaya was never officially informed about the warning from the PNP, but we learned it from TV news. It was in my performance of my duty as a journalist, which is to inform the public as truthfully as I can of the unfolding events that I considered and still consider of national interest. It is a duty that I must do to fulfill and fully avail of the constitutional guarantee of freedom of the press. The public deserves complete and correct information. For the news media, that means all players in any event must be represented in the story. In the November 29 event, Malaya saw to it that reporters were assigned to not only the police, military, and Malacanang, but also to Senator Antonio Trillanes IV and Brigadier General Danilo Lim and company who were at the Manila Peninsula. My assignment was to cover Trillanes Lim and company, and the best way to do my job was to stay at the Manila Peninsula to gather first-hand accounts and not to rely on anybody else outside the hotel. I deplore the fascistic treatment by the police of members of media who stayed on to cover the unfolding crisis at the Manila Peninsula up to the end. When we reached the stairs leading to the lobby of the Manila Pen from the Rizal room on the second floor, we were prohibited by police officers from leaving the hotel because they said we were to be brought to some place for processing. We raised a howl because we needed to go to our offices to complete our stories. A police officer told us that it was SOP or standard operating procedure in a crime investigation that those present at the scene of the crime are processed, either as witnesses or suspects. The officer brushed aside our protestations and started segregating all those in the hotel, including journalists. He asked, "Who are military officers in civilian clothes?" Two or three stood up and were taken away. The officer then asked, "Who were ABB?" We were all puzzled. So I asked, "ABB as in Alex Bongkayaw Brigade?" And he said yes. Since I was nearest to the officer at the lobby, I called out to the others who were at the top of the stairs, those who could not hear what were being said below. So I said, "Alex Bongkayaw Brigade daw." And there was laughter because many of us found it ridiculous. The officer glared and barked at me, "Hindi ka mapinapayagan magsalita." I was shocked. So I said, "Kailangan ko permission para magsalita." Then, in its case, Charmaine Gutierrez, who was standing beside me, wanted to sit down. Sabi niya, "Pwedeng umupo." Then she moved towards there were chairs in the lobby, about 3 meters away. And the officer said, "Hindi." That's when I realized, iba na to. And then, but anyway, later on, the officer allowed Charmaine to get a chair. No, ayaw pumunta dun sa upuan. At this point, the officer noticed that one video camera was running. He barked at the lady reporter, itigil na yung camera. The camera was trained at the other end of the lobby where the Magdalene officers were lying down, face down on the floor, stripped to their shorts and their hands tied at the back, at their backs. The officer became angry. He snarled at the cameraman, nililoko mo ba ako? Sinabi ko nang patayin yan. Kapag hindi mo tinigil, kukunin ko yung camera mo. Then he addressed everybody, yung mga nagka-camera, kung hindi kayo tigil, kukunin ko yung mga camera nyo. Melay Masikampo of ABS-CBN and another reporter asked the officers, pwede ba mag-CR? Sabi niya, hindi. That prompted Melay to appeal to all of us, sige, sumama na tayo para makaalis na tayo, para makaihi na tayo. So we had no choice but to go with the police to Camp Bagong Diwa for processing. The police instructed all media members to move to the right side. We did as told. At that point, it made me remember scenes from Holocaust movies, yung mga Jews na pinapapila sa concentration camps. That was my feeling. The policemen took out plastic handcuffs from plastic bag and started tying us. We protested saying that only criminals and suspects are handcuffed and we have not committed any crime. We told them we have rights. The police answered that they were just doing their job. I asked, sabi ko, bakit na-declare ba yung martial law while we were there sa taas? Kasi bakit our rights are being, or parang feeling ko our rights are suspended. I did not get an answer. Under the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, to which the Philippines is a party, basic freedoms cannot be denied citizens, including the right to be recognized under law, even during national emergencies. These rights are enshrined in our Constitution. Under Article 3 on the Bill of Rights, there was no declaration of national emergency. I noticed the presence of Police Superintendent Asher Dolina. S. Drilon of ABS-CBN and Charmaine Dugracias of NSK and I protested the handcuffing to him. Dolina eventually agreed not to have us handcuffed. But on the bus, I saw some journalists with their hands tied. In fact, when they put their handcuff hands out of the window, the police tried to hit them with a rattan truncheon. In fact, it was so, the scene was, I can say, grotesque because ABS-CBN gave us a packed dinner. And those who were hand-tied couldn't eat. I mean, how can they eat with their hands? So we had to, you know, we had to help them open the packed lunches and even the water. We had to, those of us who had our hands free had to help them open the bottles of water so they can drink. Kasi, parang tapos nahiya na mga kami kumain kasi paano kami makakain sila, hindi sila makakain. Tapos, that was deplorable. There is no justification for what the police did to us that night. Even in armed conflicts, under the Geneva Convention, journalists enjoy the status of protected persons in recognition of the role they play in society. No democratic country can properly function without a truly free press. Journalists serve the public's right to know in matters that concern them, because an enlightened citizenry is what democracy is all about. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dosilias. Next to give his opening statement and remarks, may I recognize Mr. Amado Makasayt, the President of the Philippine Press Institute. Mr. Makasayt, you are recognized.
Ladies and gentlemen of the Senate, my colleagues in this thankless job of being in media. I was at the peninsula during that dialogue. I didn't feel any better when Secretary Puno said, the police has apologized. But he went on to say, after repeating the apology, that arrests will be made again should a similar situation arise in the future. And he explained that people, news media, covering enemies of the state, what they call rebels like Senator Trillanes, will be given The word they used is request. Will be requested twice to leave. If we in media do not oblige the second request, we will be arrested. What he failed to say is the fact that we in media try to cover both sides. You know, we present one side and the other side, although sometimes they're both wrong, because there are three sides, your side, my side, and the correct side. Anyway, what he did not tell that huge audience, mostly of broadcast people, is whether or not media covering soldiers of the state will also or will similarly be given two requests, and if they don't leave, they will be arrested. He didn't have one word about that, which to me means is a clear, undisguised attempt to suppress our freedom to cover the events obtaining on the other side, or obtaining in the among the ranks of the enemies of the state. I ended up with saying, and I have always maintained this, I have maintained this in the four decades I have been in this stupid business, that media and the state have or should be classical adversaries. I pointed out rather clearly that both media and the state, being classical adversaries, should have the comfort of knowing that while what they do not always sit together, as a matter of fact, they hardly ever sit together, there is the comfort of drawing the conclusion that they both work for public welfare or for public good. It was almost a warning when I said that the biggest threat to democracy is when media and the state come to terms. That's all I said, and that's all I'm going to say now. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Makasayat. Next, may I recognize Mr. Main de Gracias of NHK Broadcasting. Mr. Main, you're recognized.
Good morning. I'm a reporter for Nippon Hoso Kyokai, or Japan Broadcasting Corporation. NHK is Japan's sole public broadcaster. Thus, it is independent from any private or government organization and doesn't run its 5 television and 3 radio services for the Japanese audience on commercial basis. NHK Manila is just one of the 26 news bureaus around the world, while it maintains 54 stations across Japan. NHK also broadcasts news and general programs for overseas viewers and listeners on both television and radio. Its programs are distributed around the clock to foreign cable TV stations, satellite broadcasters, while some can be accessed on the internet. The company prides itself to have pioneered broadcasting in the digital high-definition format, the first in the world, through its recent satellite channel, the Digital High Vision. Our news broadcast is mainly in Japanese, but I do English reports for various news programs for NHK World, the international broadcasting service of NHK. Our news bureau in Manila also covers outside the Philippines whenever and wherever we will be needed when news breaks anywhere in Asia. It is noteworthy to mention that NHK established a news bureau in the Philippines in 1986 when the world was seeing the imminent restoration of democracy via EDSA People Power One. Since then, NHK never left the Philippines and continued to report the strides and leaps that this country took along a democratic path. The November 29, 2007 incident at the Manila Peninsula, to NHK, it was just one among many news that we file from the Philippines. Be it here or elsewhere in the world, this kind of news events would require as much as possible extensive coverage and first-hand account. but it was the first time, at least in the Philippines and in a similarly democratic space, that our team was subjected to such police action in the performance of our job as journalists, foreign correspondents at that. Let me state for the record that we were covering on that day the court hearing at the Magda Law at Makati Regional Trial Court. When they walked out, it is almost reflexive for us to follow and cover the event as it unraveled to Manila Peninsula. And from a universal standpoint as a journalist, it was our duty to report the event as it is happening, and we saw the need to be there to give the world the right to correct information. While being there, we had a clear sense of the situation on the ground, and to us, there was no clear threat to the media covering there. And should there be any risk and threat to our security, by our determination, NHK will make the appropriate decision. And also for the record, our news desk did not receive any specific request or advice from any government authority to pull out. But to NHK, the decision to pull out is ours to make, in the same way that our decision to stay for the coverage was solely our responsibility. I would like to thank this honorable chamber for inviting me to this inquiry, that I may personally make known what has happened in there when the camera stopped rolling as we were ordered, when all that was left inside the Manila Peninsula were just the media and a few civilians in the hands of the Special Action Force of the Philippine National Police. So much have been said and written about the media who covered there, both scoring those that have stayed behind and appreciating the role that we played to have a well-informed public after that. Now let me speak my mind. Perhaps I claim authority for one that had been there from beginning at the court until it ended in my processing in Bikutan. There were certain things that were not clear to me. The fact that the authorities weren't able to elucidate these facts to me, I cannot exact the rationale why I was subjected to such police action. The threat. What was the level of threat that needed an assault by an anti-terrorist team, a unit that is trained and equipped for close quarter battle? It is not my business to question the determination of the threat, but let me just ask, if such is the capability already of the assaulting team that will enable them to discriminate the targets from the non-combatants, why would there be a need to process the media in a way that we have been restrained? Personally, I see the threat as benign. That is my appraisal of the situation on the ground. From the many sieges in the Philippines, the Kabatangan siege, the May 1 Malacanang siege, the Lamitan, to name a few, the Manila Peninsula siege was not at par with those where you have clear enemies. The Manila Peninsula only matched the caper of the same group at Oakwood in 2003, where they fired no shots, only strong words. What set the two incidents different would be the number, the capability of the alleged soldiers, and how the government chose to react. In Oakwood, there was a bigger strength and a number of Magdalo soldiers. In Manila Peninsula, the handful of Magdalo only had Brigadier General Danilo Lim, the very same man who led them back to barracks from Oakwood in 2003 after striking an agreement with the government. The deadline. Are we covered by the police deadline? Has police supposed that we are covered by the deadline they set on their targets? Have we become targets after we chose to recognize only the deadline in the language of newsmen, that is the time that is set by our news desk to submit our reports and stories for the day? If the alleged rebel soldiers heeded that deadline, what did the police expect would happen? Those rebel soldiers will not walk free. They will be arrested all the same. But maybe, just maybe, the media would have been spared if Magdalo walked out before the deadline. So then, that made us, the media, pawns in that deadline that the police set, or have we become part of the targets because the Magdalos didn't come out ahead of the deadline? The arrest. Are we suspects or witnesses? In either way, I should have been properly informed of the charges being leveled against me if I was a suspect. And if I was a witness, I should have resisted when they wanted to tie my hands. I shouldn't have resisted when they wanted to tie my hands. And I should have at least been afforded the privilege to know where I will be taken. When we were loaded in the bus, I am not sure any one of us was told we were taken to Bikutan. We just presume that we will be taken to the headquarters of the assaulting team, which is, in this case, the SAF. We tried to guess the possibilities where the bus will proceed, that in fact, when we made a turn at the Fort Bonifacio, everybody sighed at the thought of a short field trip. But when it headed north of C5 Road, some fancied that we may be taken to Camp Aguinaldo. But it was just a stop at the to gas up. It was not until we entered Camp Bagong Diwa at the covered court where we saw familiar faces, Senator Antonio Trillanes, General Lim, and all others that were subject of an arrest warrant. That then, I can surmise that I was a suspect after all, except that I was released soon after I answered the police. In coming to this Senate inquiry, I am inquiring as well. May this chamber help me get the answers from the authorities responsible for my arrest and who even think of doing it all over again as they may wish. Thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am. At this juncture, may I acknowledge the presence earlier of Senator Pia Cayetano as well as of the arrival of Senator Joker Arroyo.
Mr. Chairman, just an administrative matter.
Senator Arroyo is recognized.
Senator, I came from the hearing of the Joint Congressional Power Commission, and there's so many senators there, and she asked me to that she can take that I can the allotted time for her, I can exercise it. So with the permission of the chairman, I would just like to put that.
When the turn of the gentleman arrives, we will credit to him the time of the lady senator. Proceeding now to our invited guests, may I next recognize Ms. Maria Ressa, head of ABS News and Current Affairs Group of ABS-CBN, for her opening remarks and our statement. Ma'am, you are recognized.
Not the presentation, but the go ahead.
Yeah,
okay. Your Honors, thank you very much for inviting us to talk about this event and to tell you our perspective. On November 29th, more than 30 journalists were arrested. They were handcuffed. They were transported from the peninsula to Camp Bagong Diwa in Bikutan. 12 of the journalists were from ABS-CBN, detained as suspects and witnesses, according to the police. Others were told they would be released as soon as their identities were verified. Our head of news gathering, Chari Villa, went immediately to the Peninsula Hotel to identify our people, yet she was told they would still have to be arrested and brought to Bikutan. We believe this move sets a dangerous precedent and erodes our nation's democracy. There are two points I'd like to make about the role of media in conflict situations like the Peninsula siege. First, our democracy rests on the principle that the people have a right to know. Section 7, Article 3 of the Constitution recognizes the right of the people to information on matters of public concern. Law enforcement and government officials must be accountable to the public, and our history has shown that there's no better way of doing that during crisis situations than live television coverage. In a 2004 national survey by ABS-CBN, over 90% of adult Filipinos say that during any major event, they look for news, with 87% turning to TV to make sure they're informed. After the 2007 elections, that number increased, hitting 92% in the National Capital Region alone. That's according to Pulse Asia. The clamor for information increases during times of uncertainty. That's been highlighted during nearly a dozen coup attempts and withdrawals of support in the last two decades. In 1986 and 2001, military moves turned into successful people power revolts, while failed attempts were televised during EDSA Tres, the Oakwood Mutiny, and the Peninsula Siege. Since these three failed, it obviously doesn't follow that television coverage automatically means success. During all of these, with the exception of 1986, ABS-CBN reported in a similar and consistent fashion, spurred on by the public's right to know. In performing our duty, we accepted the risks, like the other journalists here. In our case, we had overturned and burned vehicles. Some of our reporters were mauled. Other reporters were mauled. In this instance, not by the police, but by a sector of the public we serve. While the state has the right to protect itself, the public has the right to know. And as we have seen, the Filipino has always made a choice. Focus group discussions that were conducted by ABS-CBN between December 3 to 5 reflect this. The Filipinos we talked to expressed an overwhelming sentiment that they want to be kept informed, saying live television coverage should continue. We believe this is critical because an uninformed public makes any democracy unstable. It is in this light that media should be considered partners in promoting democracy rather than the other way around. It's important that the public has the information it needs to make an informed decision because that is the foundation of this democracy. Yet by arresting our journalists, authorities effectively shut down ANC's live coverage of the post-siege situation at the Peninsula Hotel. They tried to confiscate videotapes and equipment from reporters, photographers, and cameramen. You heard what Ellen said from inside. The police violated their own definition of the crime scene by approaching our transmission facilities outside the peninsula to try to confiscate our videotapes and stop our coverage. This is effectively censorship at a time when the conflict had all but been resolved. To date, they still have at least one videotape and two radios owned by ABS-CBN. The second point, which has clear ramifications for the future, is the role journalists play in conflict situations like these, EDSA, Oakwood, Peninsula. On December 5, DILG Secretary Ronaldo Puno called the Peninsula a crime scene and said that journalists violated two laws during that time. He cited Article 151 of the revised Penal Code, which has to do with resistance and disobedience of persons in authority, and PD 1821 for obstruction of justice. These statements have far-reaching consequences because now every journalist reporting on a conflict situation has to worry that he or she may be arrested and charged, like my colleagues here. Beyond that, if the journalist can be charged, so can the news organizations they work for. This is no longer a threat, but it's a reality, and it creates a chilling effect for working journalists who can now be charged like common criminals. Yet we believe that the law covering the presence of journalists in conflict situations is very clear, and it supersedes any legislation cited by the DILG secretary. Section 4, Article 3 of the Constitution states that no law shall be passed abridging the freedom of speech, of expression, or of the press. Let me quote Secretary Puno here. He said, "Was there an arrest? Yes. Were they charged? No. Why was there an apology? Because all of us feel bad about the way the incident materialized. We are unhappy that our friends in media had to suffer inconvenience." In one statement, the government trivialized and dismissed the violation of the Constitution as an inconvenience. While we understand the position of the Philippine National Police, by its own admission, it is using SOPs created in 2006. PNP Memorandum Circular Number 2006-0901 tells the police what to do with perpetrators, hostages, and witnesses. It has absolutely no provisions for journalists who are part of the landscape in any conflict situation. This may be the first time these rules were used. It is also the first time that the PNP has been the lead agency in a political conflict situation, which is how many journalists would characterize this event, not just a crime scene complete with overtones of bank robberies and murder. Every other coup attempt or passive withdrawals of support in the past 21 years were handled by the Department of National Defense. Perhaps this is part of the reason why the rules were changed in the Peninsula siege. We journalists are by no means perfect. Some of us have been accused of being arrogant, and that is how we've been portrayed by the police in this instance. But the reason we feel we need to hold the line is simply because if we give in, we would have contributed to weakening our democracy by depriving the public of the information it wants and it needs. Having reported from numerous combat zones in Southeast Asia and around the world, I am very aware of the risks we journalists face. In Indonesia, I barely survived a crossfire between government troops and protesters. In Aceh, my team and I were detained, but that's to be expected under the government then. It was an authoritarian regime. In East Timor, Pakistan, India, China, despite the dangers and restrictions, you calculate the risks, and as Charmaine did, you make a judgment. And in every one of these situations that can be life-threatening, you make sure that if you stay, that the odds are high that you will survive to tell the story. What I've learned from experience is that every situation is different, and what you do depends on the system of government you're operating under, i.e., you would not make the same decision in a democracy that you would under a dictatorship, and vice versa. The next point is every journalist, every one of us in this room, and our news organization assesses risks differently. That's why I find it slightly ludicrous for the PNP to quote the ethics manuals of the CBC, the BBC, of ABS-CBN to bolster its point that all journalists should have left when the police requested, that there is such a thing as a one-size-fits-all response. All these codes do in these instances is to give guidance, to talk about the philosophy of the organization, but in the end, the judgment call and the decision to stay or to go, as well as the risks that that entails, it falls with the journalist. We balance the fear for personal safety with the duty to report the truth. The police claim we were being used because they said some Magdala soldiers changed clothes and put on press passes. They claim the ABB was masquerading as journalists. The fact is, everyone tries to use us, including police and military agents, intelligence agents who were pretending to be journalists within our ranks. During the crisis, we did not report that because we didn't want to compromise their work. But their presence increased the danger for the journalists who were inside that room. Those agents could have easily told their superiors who were the real journalists and who were masquerading as journalists. We categorically state that at no instance did any journalist obstruct justice at the peninsula. Mere presence and reporting the news is not obstruction of justice. Recordings made by the police of our live coverage are now being used by the authorities as evidence against those it charged in court. The police even acknowledged that there was a failure of communication within their group. They mobilized only after they were informed of the event through TV and radio coverage. It is clear the police benefited from us doing our job. We cannot be both obstructing justice and helping justice simultaneously. Our fear is that the arrests of journalists may herald a new, more dangerous time ahead. In recent years, many developments have eroded press freedom in our country. In 2003, there were more journalists killed in the Philippines than in Iraq. And today, despite pressure from the international community, the extrajudicial killings of journalists and leftist leaders continue with virtual impunity. Intimidation tactics, indirect pressure, and libel suits have been used to attempt to control journalists. In 2006, Proclamation 1017 severely curtailed press freedom after authorities threatened to shut down news groups and station tanks outside TV networks. Also last year, Freedom House, an international group which conducts an annual survey of political rights and civil liberties, downgraded its rating of the Philippines from free to partly free. Given this context, the arrests of journalists is extremely alarming, especially since it has now been elevated as policy by Secretary Puno, who warns journalists that the police would do it again. To add insult to injury, after authorities apologized for the arrests, they began to publicly question the motives of our journalists. Officials maligned us by implying we were working with Trillanes' group, despite the absolute lack of evidence for these accusations. Now they say they will look at the franchises of television networks. All this only points out that the attempts to intimidate and to harass journalists continue. While it's inconvenient for law enforcement officials to have to contend with media in conflict zones, this is a necessity that is guaranteed by the Constitution and a check and balance of a vibrant democracy. The Medellin Declaration, Resolution 29, adopted by UNESCO's General Conference in 1997 to combat impunity of crimes against journalists, as well as Resolution 1738, adopted just last year by the UN General Assembly, proposed by the Security Council, condemns the attacks against journalists in conflict situations like this. On November 29th, the journalists who chose to stay and to report on the peninsula siege after it looked dangerous, after authorities moved into the Peninsula Hotel, displayed tremendous courage and risked their safety for the public they serve. A colleague from the Foreign Correspondents Association of the Philippines captured the spirit of our thoughts. She said, "If someone else can deliver the truth better, we would give way. If we chose to leave at the request of the PNP, then we would have to swallow the PNP version of the truth because we chose to give up the access we already have. That would be a disservice to the public we serve."
Thank you. The chair would like to recognize and place on record the presence of Senators Cayetano and Senator Enrile and Senator Lacson. Proceeding now for the opening remarks and statements of our invited guests in the order that they arrived, may I now recognize Mr. Roy Mabasa, the President of the National Press Club, for his opening statement. Sir, you are recognized.
Thank you so much, Your Honors. The National Press Club of the Philippines appears to this honorable committee today upon invitation to express its position regarding the mind-boggling clash between the liberty of the press and the authority on the coverage of crisis events that have implications to the existence of government, existence of the state, and existence of the president and other persons occupying high positions in the government. First, let us set it straight that we are expressing the view of the NPC and not of our personal opinion. Thus, being spokesman of the organization created to uphold press freedom as the primary purpose, we may be personally against it, but we are compelled to say it in obedience to the duty as officers thereof. Let us also define the issue as this. What remedies should we have in the face of the clash of interest of the media and of the government during the crisis events? Before submitting the NPC recommendation, let us begin from a common ground that the media and the government authority are all for the preservation of the state. The media gathers facts about the going-ons in the government and reports them to the public with the view of checking the duly constituted authorities so that they perform their jobs to the satisfaction of the public. A satisfied public keeps peace and order, weakens rebellion and secession, and eradicates breeding grounds for rising up in arms. The government authority acts not only to preserve itself, but also to defend the state from secessionists and aggressors. Despite the common ground, problem arises when both parties perform and exercise their duties and rights. The media gathers facts and records events before reporting them to the public, which works the government authority sees as interfering with its performance of its duties. This is the situation in the November 29, 2007 Manila Penn standoff. The clash of interest has become more pronounced due to the obligation of the media to tell the truth, or it will be guilty of libel. Yet it can never ascertain the truth without being present in the scene of the action. To stay put inside the Manila Pen on that fateful day became more urgent and necessary for journalists to risk lives due to the circumstance still vivid in the mind of every media man then. The same Special Action Forces policeman stormed an air control tower at the NAIA that killed the late Colonel Panfilo Villaruel. Fortunately, we have another common ground here. The modern jurisprudence leans on a clear and present danger rule. Not only the mere balancing of interest test in favor of the government or state as the only justification for interference with the exercise of the liberty called press freedom. There is another common ground. No law shall be passed abridging the freedom of the press. With these common grounds, the National Press Club sees harmony of these seemingly conflicting interests. To do this, the NPC proposes to adopt a policy that during crises of high public interest, the media shall not be barred from getting into the scene, but the authority must ensure that journalists are first forewarned or real danger to their lives and given sufficient time for their withdrawal from the scene before launching the action deemed necessarily in fulfillment of their duties. In this way, the state does not risk encroaching into the inviolable prohibition against abridging the freedom of the press, at the same time eliminating worries and liabilities for media men hurt or killed in the process. After all, it is a matter of choice for journalists who even risk embedding in armies during war, as in the latest Gulf War in Iraq. To take this kind of risk is inherent in many journalists. It is the same nature to a ship captain who does not leave until his vessel sink to nowhere. The postman out to save pouches of meals from loss, the soldier willingly going out of war for his country, and the policeman risking life fighting a much more powerful criminal organization. In short, journalists know how to die too. This proposal is actually similar to the PNP Media Relations Manual, Section 11, Paragraph G, Subparagraph 3, which states, and I quote, "News media representatives should be prevented from access to any area because of the possibility of their injury or death. The public information officer should explain the circumstances of the situation and, in the case of the media, insist entry in the area. The concerned media must execute in writing that he was informed of the risk and access in the said area in his volition." In support of this provision, the same manual, Section 11, Paragraph 5, Subparagraph 4, states, and I quote again, "In agreeing on the rule of the coverage, it is important that you stress to the members of the media the importance of staying out of the line of fire, not only for their safety, but also for the security and success of the operation." The proposal to provide a command post for newsman is not enough because it provides an opportunity for deception for authorities giving briefings. But it may be placed as an option for those who do not want to risk life staying in the line of fire. In addition, the National Press Club proposes that the mere presence of journalists in crisis incidents should be given the presumption that they are doing their official business of exercising press freedom, and they should not be arrested and handcuffed unless circumstances within the personal knowledge of the authority clearly show complicity with perpetrators of any crime. What happened in the aftermath of the surrender of the group of Senator Trillanes was a sweeping arrest without even personal knowledge that they commit obstruction of justice. To quote a certain Colonel Coronel in his testimony for the PNP during the hearing at the Commission on Human Rights, he said under oath that they arrested the media men for, quote-unquote, possible suspicion of committing obstruction of justice. The word suspicion means not sure. Yet they qualified it with another unsure word called possible. This we respectfully submit to this honorable body. Thank you.
Pakisubmit po kung maaari yung hard copy ng inyong binasang statement para mabigay po namin sa mga miyembro. Next, the chair would chair first would like to recognize and place on record the presence of Senator Jingoy Estrada. Next, the chair would like to recognize Mr. Butch Canoy, the president of the Kapisanan ng mga Broadcaster ng Pilipinas, for his opening statement and remarks. Mr. Canoy, sir, you're recognized.
Your honors, good morning. The Kapisanan ng mga Broadcaster ng Pilipinas, in no uncertain terms, condemns the arrest of journalists covering the siege of the Makati of Manila Pen last November 29. The police said that they made the arrest to secure the safety of non-participants in the rebellion and to weed out suspected rebels of their supporters who might have insulated themselves among the media. These objectives could have been easily met without handcuffing and herding the media or hustling them off to detention centers with less insult to their persons. We are not asking the government to give journalists special treatment or accord them with privileges other than those conferred by the Constitution and the law to ordinary citizens. But we do maintain that we were at the Manila Pen last November 29 to provide the public with true and accurate information about the event. For this, whatever lapses they might have committed, they were willing to risk their lives. It is inevitable for journalists to find themselves in dangerous situations when reporting events. When this happens, they must make a hard decision whether to stay or to flee. Who can say in any given situation which decision is the right one? We must at least allow the journalist to make his own assessment and after weighing the risk, make his own decision. But he must also be prepared for the consequences of that decision. We believe that this was what happened in the Manila Pen last November 29. The police had to make their decision, and the journalists theirs. In a dialogue between the media and the government at the Manila Pen last December 5, which the KBP organized, our good friend Mr. Jake Makasayit of Malaya pointed out that the press and the government are traditional and classic adversaries because of their respective obligations, and that we should perhaps be more concerned when media and government go to bed together. We agree that to effectively perform its role as watchdog, media must maintain its fierce independence from those in power. But we also believe that in the interest of better serving the public, there are areas where we must find some common ground with those who have their own responsibility to fulfill. It was in this spirit that we have sought to bring the representatives of media and government to a dialogue at the Manila Pen. Most of the time during the meeting, each side was just trying to justify its actions during the November 29 event. This was expected. But something did come out, and we believe that this was not given any attention, was that DILG Secretary Puno said after the meeting that he would ask for a review of the operational guidelines for conflict or crisis situations to help avoid the mistakes in the November 29 incident with regards to media. We consider this significant because it was a tacit admission that perhaps the operating rules of the police underground were deficient in one aspect, and second, there was an offer to do something to correct the problem. We believe, therefore, that we should stop sensationalizing the issue. By no means should we stop talking about it or debating its conflicting sides. But at the same time, we must move forward by looking at practical measures that would satisfy the concerns for both media and government. The freedom of expression, of speech, and of the press is ends in themselves. They enhance the quality of our lives as individuals when we exercise them. But at the same time, they are also means. The practice of free speech and press freedom has a purpose, and that is to encourage public discussion of diverse ideas so that we can agree with what is the higher common interest. We believe that we can arrive at a common ground on the issue of press freedom on one hand and public order and security on the other. We need to begin with some humility. We need to be aware that we are not perfect, and when we are in conflict, we should consider the possibility that there are times when we might be wrong. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kanoy. Can you kindly submit a hard copy of the statement you just read to us this morning? Proceeding now to the next resource person, may I recognize Mr. Tony Lopez, the chairperson of the Manila Overseas Press Club. Mr. Lopez, sir, you are recognized.
Good morning, sirs. Thank you for the privilege of being invited to this hearing. I represent the Manila Overseas Press Club as its chairman. Founded in 1945, it is the oldest press club in Asia. It was begun by the Foreign Press Corps that came with General Douglas MacArthur. MacArthur stayed at the Manila Hotel and the Foreign Press Corps at the Army and Navy Club. The MOPC today is composed of foreign correspondents, senior journalists in the print and broadcast media, diplomats, professionals in the advertising and public relations, and businessmen. On my part, I have been a journalist for 40 years, including 25 years as a foreign correspondent, working at various times for the Mainichi Shimbun, German television, and Asia Week, the defunct Hong Kong-based weekly subsidiary of Time Warner of New York. Locally, I have worked for the smallest and the largest newspapers, from the Manila Chronicle to the Manila Times. I've been trained as a journalist since high school, where I was a campus editor, and since college, where I was a campus editor. I finished journalism, minor in economics at UST, and global journalism at the University of Stockholm. I come here with a deep sense of anxiety about the future of journalism and media in this country. In the afternoon and evening of November 29, some 50 journalists were rounded up at the point of a gun, harassed, handcuffed, humiliated, and herded like cattle, to use Senator Gordon's animal farm language, to a suburban military camp. The 50 is more than the number. In fact, 8 times the number of journalists arrested and brought to a military camp in the first 30 days of martial law in 1972, 35 years ago. Those journalists arrested 35 years ago were not arrested by lowly SPOs. They were arrested by officers with the rank of major and colonel. They were not handcuffed. They were invited for questioning, and of course they were briefly detained. They knew why they were being arrested, because they were journalists critical of Ferdinand Marcos. On the other hand, the journalists caught like criminals on November 29 were arrested by SPOs at the point of the gun. The arresting officers were hostile. They bristled with high-powered automatic firearms. They used plastic ties, the kind used to lock check-in luggage to enable the TSA at airports to unlock your luggage to check if there's a bomb or contraband. That reduces journalists to the level of excess baggage, which is exactly how the police and the military treated the journalists at the peninsula. The excuse for bringing the journalists to a military camp was for a more efficient processing, because the Manila pen at that time supposedly was not yet secure. That is a lie. There were more than 1,000 police and military forces at the hotel. Overwhelming, considering that there were only 24 military renegades, including the four who apparently escaped. Subsequent cleanup of the hotel showed only 2 rebel suspects as holdout. In other words, at the time the journalists were being arrested, the hotel was already cleaned of rebel elements, except perhaps for some looters, including the one who got the laptop of the hotel manager. And the journalists didn't know and never knew until this day why they were being arrested. No martial law was declared on November 29. Before November 29, the Philippines has had at least 15 coup attempts, small, medium, and large scale, real and imaginary. 2 of them were very successful, against Ferdinand Marcos and against Joseph Estrada. In my recollection, at no instance in those 15 coup attempts were journalists arrested, only now. In this light, I wouldn't be surprised if some higher authority than General Razon ordered the arrest of the journalists. The thoroughness of the operation effecting the rounding up of the journalists cannot but indicate higher policy decision-making, which means the arrest of journalists during military rebellions or coup attempts is now an unwritten policy, which means that next time, journalists will again be arrested if they are caught in the middle of a coverage of a military rebellion. But covering a rebellion or a coup attempt is not like covering an ordinary crime. It is not like a traffic accident, a bank robbery, a hostage taking, or even a massacre. By its very nature, a rebellion or a coup attempt is a political act. The dangers are inherent. The stakes are high. It is big news, a matter of great public interest, which is why journalists will be there to cover it, whether they will be threatened with arrest or harm or plain murder. The journalists wouldn't mind. Journalism is a profession different from other jobs. It is not like that of a senator or a congressman who enjoys so much perks and access to public money. We were not elected to our job. Nobody elected us. But just like the president of the Philippines, the senators and the congressmen, we don't need to go to school to do our job. But there's one thing that distinguishes journalism from all other professions. It is the only profession and the only job in the Philippines that is guaranteed by the Constitution. Section 4 of the Bill of Rights says, no law shall be passed abridging the freedom of speech, of expression, or of the press. No law shall be passed abridging the freedom of the press. Freedom of the press is journalism. Therefore, coverage of rebellions cannot be subject to any kind of ground rules, because the only rule of engagement that must be observed is Section 4 of the Article of the Bill of Rights. In this connection, let me recall to you the event of February 22, 1986. In the afternoon evening of February 22, 1986, us foreign correspondents were invited to Camp Aguinaldo, not for questioning, not for arrest, not for detention, but to cover an ongoing rebellion, a very real coup attempt against the regime of Ferdinand Marcos. Two of the major participants in that coup attempt are now here with us. They succeeded. Why? Because they used 50 foreign correspondents as their shield. At the time of the coup, they had no more than 20 men, because the first reinforcement arrived early morning of February 23.
Privilege, Mr. We appreciate the statement of the gentleman, and I'm grateful to the members of the press. But I must tell you that you are talking canards here. We did not use the press as a shield. That's not true. In fact, we were asking them to leave when we were being attacked. Please don't abuse our patience.
I'm sorry about that, sir. It is true, we were being told to leave, because Senator Gringo, who was then a colonel, were telling us Marcos was going to bomb us, and we never left. Finally, can I conclude?
Please proceed, Mr. Lopez.
Government is about what people think about it. Democracy is basically the opinion of the people. That is why it is defined as of the people, by the people, for the people. That opinion is usually reflected through media. Once media is subject to prior restraint before it is able to do its job, or punishment after doing its job, we will never know what the opinion is of the people about their government. That is why when a survey says this and that president is the most corrupt, that person cannot complain when that very same person manacles media. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Lopez. And the remarks of Senator Enrile are duly recorded and noted. Proceeding now to our invited guests' opening remarks, may I now recognize Mr. Kabakungan of the Philippine Daily Inquirer. Mr. Kabakungan, you are recognized. Sir, please proceed.
Good morning, Your Honor. There were four of us from the Inquirer assigned to the Peninsula Manila takeover. With me on that dog day afternoon were Bolt Contreras, Julie Aurelio, and DJ Yap. I would like to put on record that the police was never in control of the situation from the time of the takeover to the 3 p.m. ultimatum.